KTWH-LP 99.5 FM, Two Harbors, Minnesota. You're listening to What's Happening on KTWH, where we have Greg Ruberg doing a now bi-weekly check-in with us to talk about COVID updates and everything related to that. Always lots of information. Thank you so much, Greg, for being here with us this morning.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So, should we start with... let's start with booster shots and third shots. We're starting to hear a lot more about that in the news. Maybe you can update us, give us some good information about that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. This is probably the number one question we're getting over the last probably week or so. So there's been a lot in the news about booster shots and additional doses and third doses, and people are really trying to figure out what all of this means. And it's confusing. Yep. Because I think some of the terminology has changed or shifted or maybe kind of nuanced. So I'll just kind of walk through what we're doing here and how we're kind of sorting this out.
Okay, great.
So the first one is this concept of additional or third doses. So right now, the CDC is recommending that people with moderate to severe immunocompromised conditions receive an additional or a third dose. So this is just the same as dose number one, dose number two, and this is dose number three. So the idea behind that is people that have immunocompromised diseases or diagnoses need that third dose to improve their immune response. So I'll just kind of walk through quickly what these are. So number one has been receiving active cancer treatment or tumors or cancers of the blood. So that's one condition. The second one is receiving organ transplant or taking medications to suppress the immune system. Number three has received a stem cell transplant within the last 2 years or taking medication to suppress the immune system. The next one is moderate to severe primary immunodeficiency, and there's some very specific diagnoses there that are, you know, are very probably somewhat rare. But the next one is advanced or untreated HIV infection. And then the last one is active treatment with high-dose corticosteroids or other drugs that may suppress your immune system. So those categories or those conditions require a third dose. And what a third dose is, it's the same exact dose as the first two. It's just the third time you've received it versus everybody thought that you got two and you were done with this and fully vaccinated. So that's a little bit of a change now over the last couple of weeks or months, but I think that's important. I've read reports that this is about 3% of the U.S. population. So it's, again, a fairly small number. If you look at Lake County, again, it's going to be a small number over our 10,600 people. So that's kind of that third dose concept.
Yeah, now what I'm sure there's going to be the fear of like, so is this just going to keep on going? And I know I read recently about, from the beginning of the COVID vaccine is like a flu vaccine. It's one that it doesn't provide lifelong immunity. Is there more that you can share about that just to get the information out?
Yeah, so what I've read and what we've discussed internally is, you know, the initial thought, well, I think the first thing to comment on is the vaccine is still very effective. When you look across the country right now at what's going on, and there's some very challenging situations in different states and different regions, which we can talk about later, the hospitals, the people that are hospitalized are primarily unvaccinated individuals. So they're the ones ending up in the ICUs on ventilators and again, passing away. It's rare. There's still breakthrough infections on vaccinated individuals, but it's pretty rare, and they're not. It's not always significant disease, which is the whole purpose of the vaccine. So, you know, I've heard some criticism of the vaccine saying, well, it doesn't work because people are getting sick. Well, it was never designed to prevent you from getting COVID-19. It was to prevent you from hospitalization, serious illness, or death. So it works. It's still very effective. The idea around this third dose just makes it more effective for those whose immune system doesn't get kind of stimulated or triggered with the first two doses. So I think it's likely that it's going to be very much like the flu shot where you don't get one or two doses and then your body's will respond to COVID well for months or years ahead. I think what's changed things, though, since July is the Delta variant. And again, we've heard variants all the way through this thing from B.1.1.7 and all these other kind of variants, but I try not to watch the national news or other, you know, sometimes it gets like it would make you think that the vaccine is not effective against any of the Delta or any of the COVID-19 virus, including Delta, but that's just not true.
Yeah.
So again, to your point, I think we're going to have to keep evaluating and learning and probably adjusting our response to this. But, you know, I've had both doses and I feel protected, well protected. I'm not concerned about ending up in a hospital or on a vent. So, I'll decide about a booster when that time comes.
Yeah, and do you have any predictions or hopes about testing either testing as a more widespread way to really keep everything moving, or as antibody testing to really find out where we're at, you know, how long the vaccine does last, just things like that. I mean, it seems like there'd be great potential to reduce harm that way, but I don't know if we have the infrastructure or the organization to do that in our country.
Yeah, so I think let me just cover boosters really quickly, and then I can talk about that. So on the booster side, so boosters are really offered as, they're probably going to be offered in the future for people who have had that full course of vaccine. So both, you know, two doses of Pfizer, two doses of Moderna, and they've had a good immune response. So I always consider myself as one of those. I've had both, had a good immune response, I feel protected. But over time, that immunity will wane in terms of effectiveness against the virus because it's the Delta virus. It's mutated somewhat. And so again, we keep hearing in the news that there's this data being gathered and evaluated around boosters. And we think, I've heard September 20th is kind of that date that the president has announced and others, CDC. And so the debate, I think, right now is the data is inconclusive still. So I think it was maybe, I would say it was premature to announce that boosters are coming September 20th because we just don't know yet.
Okay.
And then in the last week, we've heard, well, it's going to be 8 months after your second shot. And then it came out, no, it's going to be 5 months after your second shot because that's what Israel did. And so again, it's even unclear about that timing. But again, a booster just kind of it's just another vaccine that kind of kickstarts your immune system again because it's waned over time. So again, that's focused on the general population, so the healthy individuals that just get one more vaccine for protection. So again, I think we'll see more coming out on that when approvals and recommendations are kind of nailed down. Back to your question on the testing. What we saw this summer was really a let up on testing because case rates were down, COVID transmission rates were down, people were back out doing things. It just wasn't, didn't have a focus on COVID. And then all of a sudden in August, I would say about mid-August or maybe even this first or second week, really COVID activity started to pick up again, which, you know, more people were doing things and the Delta variant was on kind of in the mix. And now we're seeing a significant amount of COVID testing. The challenge we're right back into now within this week, I would say, is a shortage of testing supplies. We're almost out of rapid tests. We had plenty of rapid tests before, and we were using those quite often because the supply was good and people got results back quick, and it was better for decision-making if you were positive for quarantine and all of that. So now we're starting to have to ration out who and when we use rapid tests because otherwise we're going to be completely out, which doesn't help us when we hospitalize patients, when we have to have surgery, those kind of things. So I think if testing supplies and workforce to support testing weren't an issue, that could be a good strategy. But everything that I've read said that increasing vaccination numbers is a much more effective strategy at addressing this pandemic than testing. So
okay. And then tell us a little bit, just let's bring it local. How is Lakeview Hospital doing? Do we have, how is stress is your system?
So we're still, I would say we're doing fairly well. So in Lake County, our numbers are low still. People have just done a really nice job of taking precautions. And, you know, we have all kinds of things in our favor here compared to Texas and Louisiana and Florida and Arkansas and those places. So the challenge with us right now is not COVID. So we're not getting having COVID patients coming into the clinic or the ER or the hospital causing kind of a stress to the system. The issue we have, right back to what we talked about before, was because there are so many unvaccinated in hospitals now from Duluth to the Twin Cities to Rochester to St. Cloud, is we can't find hospital beds for non-COVID issues. So it's always that indirect link. And so people say, well, COVID's not an issue here, so we're all fine. Well, we're fine in terms of COVID, but if you have a heart attack or a stroke, we still need to find you a bed somewhere for you know, cardiac catheterization or other interventions. And those beds are just really difficult to find. It's not, so there's really a couple of reasons for that. One is unvaccinated people are taking up hospital beds in ICUs, which that happened before. And the other thing is the workforce challenges that we're all experiencing, whether it's healthcare or other. It's just hot. So there are beds open across the state and probably across the country sitting completely empty, but there's no staff to care for people. So it's just a different kind of a dynamic where, I mean, the kind of physical capacity is there, but the workforce capacity is not. So it's kind of the perfect storm where you've got more unvaccinated or more people in the hospital with COVID. You've got less people to care for them, and you still have medical needs that have always will continue. And so
right.
It's a lot of work sometimes to transfer somebody out to a higher level of care, which We had a little reprieve this summer where that was not an issue.
Yeah. And what is the cause or causes of the workforce drop? Or maybe it's not a drop. Maybe it's the same level, but there's just, that's not enough.
Well, yeah, I've thought a lot about that, and there's a lot of discussion about that. I think there's a whole bunch of factors. I think number one is fatigue and burnout. I think healthcare workers are tired, just like everybody else. They've worked long hours. They've worked under stress. You know, ICU nurses across the country have been pushed to the limit. And I think people have just said, I can't do this workload. So people have cut back how many hours, you know, per week they work.
Right.
Some other people just maybe have stepped out of the workforce to take a break, to care for kids or do other things. We have vaccine mandates happening across the country in large systems. And so employees, you know, some have just said, I'm not getting it, so I can't work. So that's part of it. I think just this kind of whole shift. I've read a couple of articles recently about this pandemic. They're actually calling it the Great Resignation, where people in all industries, but healthcare specifically, are just saying, I'm not doing this. I don't need to work this much. I don't need this much money. I can live on less.
Right.
I need to reevaluate my life. And so I think all of those things have come together to create the perfect storm that we're in right now. So there's not one issue.
Yeah, wow. Interesting. And here you are sort of in the thick of it and responsible for just our little hospital, but that must seem big enough for right now.
Yeah, it's just different. It was like 1 month of normal and then right back to what it's been for the last 16 or 17 months. But, you know, I think we're better prepared, and our staffing here is stable. We've got, you know, we've lost a few over the course of the last month, but, you know, people are working hard and our volumes we're busy in most areas. And so it's, every day is a new challenge, but statewide bed issue and national bed issue is a big concern.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Greg. Is there anything else before we sign off?
No, I think I can certainly update the next time that we talk on boosters and third doses and testing and numbers, but, you know, we're watching the return to school really closely and see what that's going to do to numbers in Lake County, and monitoring the school's plan and all of that. So.
Great. All right. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Have a great day.
You too. That was Greg Ruberke. He is the CEO of Lakeview Clinic and Hospital, giving us a biweekly update on COVID and all related things, of which there are many. Stay tuned. In just a minute, Kenny Blumenfeld will be with us to talk about weather and climate. You're listening to KTWH. Listening to KTWH 99.5 FM, and this is What's Happening, and I'm here with Kenny Blumenfeld. Thank you, Kenny, for showing up this morning again.
always good to talk to you, Katya.
It is always good, and I'm happy to report we did get some substantial rain last weekend. I thought it was more, but it was apparently between 1 and 2 inches where we were, and maybe between 1 and 2 inches up by the Greenwood Fire. And I just couldn't imagine how this wouldn't put out the fire, this hard rain, but it did not put out the fire, but as you probably know, it did really help. And, you know, we haven't really felt any haze since, so I don't know, it seems like it's doing a lot better.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, my understanding is that the fire is still plenty hot at the core, but that, yeah. You know, that some of the flames were extinguished from the rain. It was nice. I mean, I have to say Northeast Minnesota kind of came out the most concerning out of this big wet system that we had. We had parts of Minnesota got 10 inches of rain.
Yeah.
And you know, the Twin Cities area had about a 1 week total of anywhere between 3 and 6 inches. And up in the Arrowhead, it was more like one to two, maybe 2.5 in some areas. And that's great, but it didn't, you know, for most of the rest of the state, these rains actually kind of undid the monthly deficit that had been building for August. And then a lot of Minnesota ended up wetter than normal for August. Not so for Northeast Minnesota. In fact, in what we call climate division number 3, and that's the 3 counties that make up the Arrowhead region. I think it was only Brimson. The observer at Brimson was slightly above normal. I might have the specifics wrong, but it was the vast majority. There's, you know, 20 some stations up in the Arrowhead, and the majority of them still ended up with a deficit for August. So we're thankful for the rain. I would say you all need more than the rest of us do at this point, but we all still need rain. I was looking at our statewide deficit going back to January of 2020, and even with a bonus, you know, kind of a big month in August, we're still going to average probably 5 or 6 inches below where we would need to be. So we're still substantially short of water.
Yeah, and I know the lake level has dropped significantly this summer, too, which would be obvious because it's mostly fed by precipitation. And but, yeah, so we're still in a drought. And what does this mean for the next? It sure seems wetter. I mean, it seems like every day there's some humidity in the air. But once again, you know, last night it was a chance of rain and it sort of dripped a little bit, but we sure didn't get much. So maybe that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at what's been happening, and of course, most of us, and the most prudent is to rather than say you understand exactly what's going on, take a little bit of a wait and see approach in terms of how the next several weeks are gonna go. I think that the very optimistic view and what we hope for is that having all this rain come really moistened everything up. And also signified a change in the weather pattern, and that maybe we'll be able to look back at this final week in August and the beginning of September as kind of a turning point for the drought. That is an optimistic view, but it's possible too.
Yeah.
The other way to another view that's not as optimistic would to say, well, you know, we got lucky, we got a nice interlude from the dry conditions, but it's going to take much more than that to produce a true turning point. I mean, we saw immediate response in some systems. For example, the iconic Minnehaha Falls in Minneapolis, which is about 60 feet tall. It's one of the probably biggest urban waterfalls in the country. It had, and it's not a cascade, it's a, you know, it's a straight down drop.
Yeah, right. I've been there.
And so it was all but dry. It had dried up to just a trickle, like a leaky faucet, basically. It was very, very peaked. And then now it's roaring again. And so we saw responses like that, where a lot of the streams that had been at, you know, near record lows, they bumped up a bit. So we're seeing some responses, and that's great. But we, you know, have to remember there is a several inch deficit still. So to replenish the soil, to replenish the groundwater, you know, to get Lake Superior and the other, you know, inland lakes back up, it's going to take more than this. And we're moving into the dry season. Winter is our dry season.
Yeah,
but
right.
fall is this kind of powder keg season where it's not as dry as winter, but the vegetation starts drying up because you lose photosynthesis and you lose the evapotranspiration, which is just when the plants remove water from the soil and then give it back to the atmosphere. And so once the plants stop moving water through their systems, their various, you know, stem and root systems, that's when fire risks really increase. So as much as the rain helped, what we really need now is a good dousing over the next couple weeks as we get into that dry period of fall to kind of head off what could be a pretty nasty fire season.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we're looking at, but in the meantime, the weather looks pretty good for the next week. I mean, wow.
Yeah, so we're not, wow. Let me just sidetrack a little bit. We're not getting Hurricane Ida in any sense, correct?
Oh, yeah, that is true. And, you know, the big climate news this week was that Hurricane Ida absolutely blasted into Louisiana, and it did not stop there. In fact, its remnants, as a lot of listeners know, it moved, kind of took a hook-shaped path and ended up in the New York City area, where it just went to town and dropped enormous quantities of rainfall. It, for your listeners who remember the big 2012 floods that hit Duluth and Two Harbors, just imagine that. Imagine that caliber of rainfall, but imagine it covering the entire Arrowhead. I mean, it was just a geographic scope that we can't really comprehend. I would say even more than that Arrowhead. I would say, you know, track it from the Arrowhead down to about St. Cloud and keep it about 60, 70 miles wide. And then you're looking at the kind of rainfall that region had. Just enormous. No, we're not being touched by Ida in any way, shape, or form. And we're pretty good at detecting this because we can track not just the actual weather, but if any extra water vapor or humidity from the system has made its way up into our region. We can see that from satellite products. And it's pretty clear that Ida left us alone, which is probably good because it didn't do good things wherever it
was. Yeah, that is something. I have a sister in Philadelphia, and they are without water, probably. The system is overwhelmed, and they actually have power, but no water, interestingly, and flooding basements, et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty amazing what happened out there, and it just seemed like it sure didn't get here, but you say we have some pretty nice weather coming this week, it sounds like.
Yeah, now I want to stay on your sidetracked topic about, you know,
you can talk about that all you want.
One of the things that we've talked about, I've been talking about it with some of my colleagues, is, you know, we're in drought, and it's been a while, and it's bad. But when we look at it, you kind of have to remember whose house we're in.
Mm.
You know, the last several decades have been extremely wet in Minnesota, and it's been escalating towards more wetness. And so this drought, you know, is as high impact as it is, and as kind of scary as it is, it gets into your psyche for sure.
Yeah.
What has been amazing is how just on the other side of it, I mean, you know, just peering right around the corner, it's like a major rainfall event is just sort of waiting to pounce at any moment. And so during that, the way that parts of southern Minnesota got to 10 inches of rain over 1 week was actually two nights, you know, with about 6 hours each of just extraordinary rainfall. So getting about 5-6 inches the first night, and then 4 or 5 inches the next night. And that was right along the Minnesota-Iowa border. And it's just a good reminder that even in drought, you know, we have so much extra water in the atmosphere now. that even in drought, you can get enormous rainfalls. And it makes you sort of shudder to wonder what can happen when we're not in drought, because when there's more moisture everywhere for these systems to draw on. So one of the big lessons from 2021 that I think is new to climatologists and meteorologists is that in many ways we ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
And the other big lesson that is really hard to comprehend is that weather like you've never seen it, and you know, we don't know if and when it would arrive here in Minnesota and what exactly it would look like, but weather like you've never seen it gives you only about 3 to 5 days notice. Just, you know, if you look at the remnants of Ida, folks in New York had really only a few days to even think that something remotely resembling that could happen. And I don't think, because they had nothing like this in their experience, they really had no way to comprehend what it was going to look like. You know, and before Ida hit Louisiana, it was in the kind of 3 to 5 day range that we got a real good sense that this was going to happen. Before the big heat wave hit the Pacific Northwest, there were signs 4 days out that this thing was, you know, really explosively hot. But in fact, it looked so funny on the models that forecasters, until it was about 2 days away, forecasters were sort of dismissing it and thinking that the weather models must be out to lunch. So it's a good thing to keep in mind for all of us. It was very humbling that, you know, we look at Minnesota's statewide all-time records, and we have to look at them all as being vulnerable. Not so much the cold weather record, but
but everything else.
The rainfall, the snowfall, and the extremes of heat, I'd say, are all still very much in play.
Well, that's so interesting, Kenny. We pretty much have to go. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Very, very good. Good talking with you, and enjoy the lovely week.
Nice. We'll have a beautiful week ahead. Thanks. Take care. That was Kenny Blumenfeld, Senior Climatologist for the Minnesota DNR. You're listening to KTWH.